We're going to do a public hearing on House Bill 2425. To begin with, we have Keith Cutler and Christy Monson and Mayor Burke. I don't know if you want to come up in mass or how you want to do this. But
actually, we're waiting on the mayor, so
Okay, why don't we do that then? And then we'll get the mayor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Keith Cutler, Assistant Attorney General. I've handed out testimony. Hopefully you have it in front of you, and I'll try to spare you from having to read it. This bill, House Bill 2425, mending provisions of the public records law, is the product of, or a product of, the gap analysis that was begun by the Attorney General's office soon after September 11, 2001. As I'm sure you all know, we were tasked at that time with looking through all Oregon law and determining if there were any gaps that really needed to be filled in so that if we suffered the same kind of attack that New York suffered back in 2001, would we have the legal grounds in place to respond as best we could. And in the course of that analysis, some of the issues we identified had to do with public records. As a result of having identified that issue, in the interim, a committee was formed. Mr. Taylor helped facilitate that, and it was a group that was broad-based. It included members of state, representatives of state agencies, utilities, both public and private, the ACLU, Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association, and I'm sure a few others that I'm leaving out. As a result of our deliberations and hammering out what we thought were necessary kinds of records that needed to be protected, the result of those deliberations is in this bill. And I think it's a very well-crafted bill and a bill that will enable the state to protect itself in ways that it cannot do so today. In broad summary, what this bill does is it broadens a couple of existing exemptions in ORS 192-501 that currently apply only to the records of public bodies, to broaden them out to apply to records that are held by public bodies, even if they may include information of private entities. In other words, it gives some information of private entities the same protection that information of public entities have when that information is in public entities' hands. Also, and very importantly, it adds a new exemption to ORS 192-502 to protect security-related information of utilities and, I'll say if for shorthand, utility-like entities. For example, the Public Utility Commission reviews safety plans of the entities that it regulates, and until this bill, if it passes, there is no explicit exemption for that security plan. If a utility provides a copy of their security plan to the Oregon Public Utility Commission, it is possible that that security plan can be exposed to the public through a public records request. This bill would enable the Public Utility Commission and other public bodies who need to review those kinds of security plans to do their jobs better. In summary, the amended exemptions are to three subsections of 192-501. Subsection 18 deals with specific operational plans, and as I summarized earlier, that exemption currently applies only to law enforcement agencies. This expands it to plans of all of any public body. 501 sub 22 deals with unauthorized access to public facilities, and again, this would enable both private entities' records that are in public hands as well as public records to be exempt from disclosure. Subsection 23 has to do with security measures of public bodies, and again, also now of private entities. So, for example, if a major business leader, somebody who has security risks is coming into Portland, they could share their security plan with the City of Portland Police, and without having any risk of City of Portland Police having to disclose the private security plan to the public. It's important to remember that the 501 exemptions are subject to a balancing test. In any particular instance, the public body would have to show that the interest in non-disclosure outweighs the interest in disclosure. And that's really an important feature of the public records law and allows appropriate balancing in these cases. The exemption to 502 is not of that sort. That's an absolute exemption. The records that fit under that would automatically be exempt from disclosure. Additionally, there's an amendment to the public records law which would make explicit that discussions, discussions of the material covered by the new exemption to 502, which would be subsection 32 as currently drafted, would be able to be discussed in executive session. Now, let me go back for just a moment to tell you a little bit about the working group that produced this. We had the benefit, looking at this last summer, of seeing what some other states had done in the immediate aftermath of September of 2001. And some of what they did was done in such haste that it was, in some cases, I think we thought overbroad, in some cases, perhaps not written clearly enough to understand really what they were getting at. We had the luxury of being able to review those pieces of legislation and really crafting this one in a way that we think appropriately balances public interest in open government with the need for the government to have security in certain areas. This bill has broad-based support. Unfortunately, today, some of the folks who support it couldn't be here, principal among them, Oregon Emergency Management and State Police. Both Ken Murphy, who's the Director of Emergency Management, and Major Greg Williford would have liked to have been here but had other commitments. They did testify on the House side, and I'm sure their testimony is available there. Present in the room, and I think not planning to testify, are representatives of the Public Utility Commission and utilities who were involved in these conversations and who I think I can fairly represent are supportive of this bill, and perhaps they're nodding their heads in the back of the room as I say that. And if I'm wrong about that, I'm sure they'll say something. We also had involved in these discussions, as I said earlier, representatives of the Newspaper Association and the Civil Liberties Union. We've hammered this out in a way that deals with their concerns about access to government at the same time as we've been able to, we think, from government's perspective, serve the security concerns. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have, and I thank you very much for allowing me to talk to you this morning.
All right. Any questions, Mr. Cutler? There are none. Thank you. Christy, who's next?
Chair Menas, members of the committee, my name is Christy Munson with the League of Oregon Cities. I'm sorry that Mayor Helen Burke, who is scheduled to be here today, was unable to attend. In her stead, we have the city manager of Corvallis, John Nelson, and with me also is Police Chief Wayne McFarland from McMinnville. I think that we'll start with comments from Mr. Nelson, and then we'll go to the Chief McFarland, and then I'll wrap it up.
All right, great. You just state your name for the record and then proceed with your
Thank question. You, Chair Manis. For the record, my name is John Nelson. I'm the city manager in Corvallis. I'd like to start just by indicating that Corvallis is the second city in Oregon that I've worked in. Previously, I was in Eastern Oregon in Pendleton. In both communities, it's been a focus of local government to have a partnership with our local media, local newspaper, radio stations. We believe firmly as cities in open government because, frankly, open government means more people are going to be informed about the business of cities and hopefully support the services that city provide. Having said that, we know post 9/11 that there are certain items that need to be protected from a security perspective, if we are going to continue to meet our mission-critical services. The one that I'm most familiar with in Pendleton is a couple, actually, that I'll mention from Corvallis. Our water system, we are right now going out to bid to hire a consultant to look at ways to make sure our water system, five different reservoirs, all the transfer stations are protected and secure in the event of a terrorist activity. We also have concerns with our airport. We are spending considerable sums of money, and frankly, we would like to spend those sums of money in a way that will allow us to protect the security of our facilities and not have that information turned over and provided to those that may do something that is not in the best interests of the city. So I want to share with you, I guess in summary, that we continue to be absolute believers in open government. We'll always do that. We just don't want to unwittingly aid or assist someone with some misintentions towards the local government and local government services, and do believe that certain security measures do need to be kept private. So, thank you for your attention.
All right, thank you, Chief.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Wayne McFarland. I'm the Chief of Police in the City of McMinnville, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police. And to summarize the written testimony I passed out, the role of law enforcement is really, as we all know, has changed a lot. And the previous testimony has already indicated some of the specifics that this House bill would offer in terms of aiding police dealing with a moving target, if you will, of changing threats that face our communities. And in fact, that's one of the things I want to emphasize. What we did 2 years ago to maintain public safety has changed at September 11th, and every day the threat tends to change. And so the ability for law enforcement to constantly update threat awareness and to do what is necessary to ensure our public safety would be benefited by limited disclosures of the public records law that House Bill 2425 would create. That I'd be open to any questions.
All right, any questions? There are no questions. You've done a remarkable job. Did you have additional testimony?
Just a couple quick points, Chairman. Christy Munson with the League of Oregon Cities. I just wanted to emphasize that the process we went through to draft this bill was a careful one, including all participants, newspapers, ACLU, and government. We believe that we came to a good balance. The couple things that the committee should note is that this bill narrowly extends already existing exemptions in the public meetings law. So we tried to very carefully tailor those exemptions and narrowly extend them to provide for protection for our locals in security measure areas. Additionally, the areas in which we narrowly extend those exemptions are already subject to a public interest balancing test. So there's additional protections above that. And lastly, even though we have these exemptions in the law, local governments do not have to keep that information or shield it. They can go ahead and give that information out if they feel it's necessary. This law is not a mandatory non-disclosure. It just allows us the option of considering whether to or not disclose. Lastly, we just thank you for your time. And if I have any questions.
I'm going to ask counsel a question here. It looks to me like we're moving parts of existing chapters around. I haven't read through the bill completely, but there are sections that are deleted related to executive sessions of certain public officials, and then it seems to reappear in the
bill. That's
right,
Mr. Chairman of the committee. What that is, they're in here, and that fooled a few of us still at the beginning. What it is, in going through the law, legislative counsel thought that it could be better rewritten and redrafted.
Okay. So
in many areas. And then some of the changes that we were suggesting just lent themselves to better reorganization if done differently.
All right. So it looked to me like that's what was happening, because I was reading through some of the deleted language and wondering why we were doing that, and then
that's
it
right.
suddenly reappears again. So
that's 100% right.
All right.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that at one time through Mr. Gallagher into an absolute panic, but
it's always nice to know that the chair is actually tracking. I do have one question, and I'm not sure whether it's the Attorney General, Mr. Cutler, or not, but the existing language on page 3, subsection 18, it starts on line 14. It says specific operational plans in connection with an anticipated threat to individual or public safety for deployment and use of personnel and equipment prepared or used by a public body if public disclosure of the plans, and here's where I have an issue, would endanger an individual's life. Now, the word would, in my thinking, means there is an actual real threat that is going to result in, and I don't want to argue over the word is, but as opposed to a potential threat, or that more likely than not, there's information that would lead one to believe that the threat is real, et cetera. So I don't want to, again, argue over minutiae here, but that word troubles me, because I think in the beginning of it talks about an anticipated threat, but how do you have an anticipated threat that would endanger? And Mr. Cutler is coming up here to answer my question, so... And maybe this has been litigated somewhere. I don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Keith Cutler. The word would is, as you can see, currently in the statute. So it's a word we've been living with for as long as exemption number 18 has been in there. I'm not aware that specific exemption has ever been litigated, but it is something that we have considered. And, Mr. Chair, I think your characterization of it is accurate. That is, would implies more of a certainty than, say, for example, a word like could would imply. If the word in there were could, then that would really greatly broaden the exemption. With the word being would, then I think, as you have pointed out, Mr. Chair, there is more of a burden on the public body to show that there is a more likely danger than the public body would have to show if the word there were could.
Again, I'm going back to the PGE BOLI construct that the Supreme Court's looking at it, and if it's unambiguous, it's unambiguous. And would, to me, really doesn't give you any flexibility. Words like would more likely than not endanger or some construction like that might work, because I don't want to open it up so it's so broad that you might lose the support of the ACLU or some other group, but it seems to me that what you're trying to do there is shield some information that you reasonably believe is a threat or could likely or would more likely than not pose a threat.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's correct. And remember, this is in the Section 501 that's going to require a balancing anyway. And the public body is going to have to demonstrate that the public interest in non-disclosure outweighs the interest in disclosure. So the public body is going to have to make a fairly good case that disclosure of the plans would endanger somebody. And let me give you what I think would be a pretty stark example. President of the United States comes to visit Oregon, and his plane is going to land in Medford. They do a lot with security with the President of the United States, and they include local law enforcement in the security detail. Of course, they push the locals away and let the feds do the majority of the work, but I think it's fair to say that if a local government is in possession of some portion of the plan for protecting the public, the President of the United States, that sort of thing would fit within this definition or this exemption. It would not require, I don't believe, the public body to prove that if disclosed, the President would be harmed. But it does require the public body to show that if disclosed, there is a high likelihood that it would endanger the President of the United States.
Okay. Senator Birdie.
I'm very comfortable with the word would here. I think if you put in anything broader, I think it could be used to really get around the intent of the open of the public disclosure law. And I really commend the people who worked on this for including everyone and trying to get it as narrow as possible. I was kind of looking around for the ONPA in the audience to who I always look to.
I think they're out there.
Yeah, they are. And I wouldn't mind hearing from them about their perceptions of the process. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, maybe it's not an issue, but maybe I'm thinking too much like a lawyer, not being one. I can be out all over the place, but of course, so can lawyers. So it just seems to me that that argument could be made that the city hasn't established that it would, in fact, result in a danger. So, and maybe it's broad enough now. I don't know. It hasn't been litigated. We don't know.
Chair Menas, yes. Christine Munson for the League. You should know that the AG's manual does interpret that section fairly narrowly, not necessarily focusing on the word would, but focusing on other clauses within that section. So you're right, that is a very narrow interpretation. I think that perhaps something that would make you more comfortable is that would actually qualifies the word endanger. So you don't have to prove that some
That's
actual
true.
Harm will actually occur, just that some endangerment
That's
will,
true.
Will
That's
occur.
Good. That's good. Now you're thinking like legislative council, would endanger, shall consider. Okay, all right. I like that. Thank you. Appreciate that. Who's next on my victim list? Let's see. The mayor skipped out on me. Let me see. I guess we've got Paul Snyder. The only other one willing to appear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and it is our fundamental belief that a primary responsibility of government is to protect the public safety, and we applaud the work of the work group on this bill. We support House Bill 2425, and that's all I've got to say.
That's it?
That's it. Unless there are questions, Mr. Chair.
Wow. That's pretty succinct. All right. Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Snyder? Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Appreciate your testimony. Anyone else who did not sign up who wants to testify? Mr. Fisco, Oregon Newspaper Publishers.
Mr. Chair, thank you. First of all, just for the record, I'm no Tom Gallagher. my name is Dave Fiskum, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Broadcasters today, but Mr. Gallagher, with whom I have worked over the months on this issue, is out of town today. And so he did indicate that it would be okay if I, on his behalf, indicated that the ONPA is supporting the current version of House Bill 2425. Tom worked a lot harder than I did on the interim on this issue, and that's to the credit of the work group for including newspapers and, in fact, by extension, at least broadcasters, because we dealt with the issues as well in the interim, especially through Tom. This is a good compromise. Both of our organizations do accept the language before you. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions, but I thought it was important for the record to indicate that the media representatives in the building are in support of House Bill 2425.
All right. Great. Any questions?
Good enough for me, Mr. Chair.
Good enough for you?
Thank you.
Good enough for me. Okay, great. Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify? If not, then I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2425. And our next bill. Let's do the Legislative Council bills we did yesterday. Mr. Chamoff, up at 2314. No, wait. I'm sorry? No. Actually, why don't we
Mr. Joseph.
Lower, but let's do John McCulley. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2682 and get Mr. McCulley up to talk about that bill.
Good
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
How are you today?
I'm very fine, thank you, members of the committee. I'm John McCulley, representing the Oregon Association of Mortgage Brokers, and appreciate this opportunity to comment on House Bill 2682. This bill comes to you from the House with one negative vote, and is before you to try to improve consumer protections in the mortgage lending law. Very briefly, Mr. Chair, the 2001 legislature approved a bill that enhanced education requirements for mortgage loan originators. These are the people in a mortgage brokerage office who deal directly with the consumers and normally have access to the most private of the consumers' financial information, be they tax records, employment records, and other documents that are important for the consumer in getting their loan. As a result of that, we believe it's important that the people who have access to such records and who often go to consumers' residences to meet with consumers to discuss their mortgage loan financing have a criminal background check conducted. And that's what one part of House Bill 2682. The other part of House Bill 2682 relates to an exemption that was created in the 2001 legislation that says that if the loan originator is an insurance agent, then they are exempt from the education requirements that every other loan originator has to complete. Since the passage of the legislation, we have discovered that several people who have insurance agent licenses are operating as full-time loan originators, that is their sole profession, and yet are claiming that because they have an insurance agent's license, they do not have to have the continuing education that other loan originators do. We worked with the insurance industry in the House and crafted an amendment that specifies a threshold that would require an insurance holder of an insurance agent's license to comply with the continuing education requirements just like any other loan originator. That's found on page 1, lines 8 and 9 of the engrossed bill. We also had an amendment in the House detailing how the regulator, in this case DCBS, will treat those with criminal convictions. They will, by rule, identify the classes of criminal convictions that would prohibit a person from being involved in this profession. We think House Bill 2682 provides consumer protection. It enhances the professionalism of the people who are in the profession of a loan originator, and we believe is an important bill for you to pass. There are two other issues I would like to mention. One is the criminal background checks are considered an investigative report, and they are conducted under the requirements of the Fair Credit Reporting Act. As a result, there are protections built in for those against whom the records check is sought. In addition, ORS 181.555 provides how the Oregon State Police deal with criminal background checks, especially with regard to employment. So there are protections built in relative to these reports. And Mr. Chair, you had asked specifically about the return of these documents to consumers, specifically, I guess, tax records, employment records, things that are original documents that consumers may not want to have in the possession of mortgage brokers and loan originators. In following up on your request, Mr. Chair, I talked with the regulator and find that they receive one or two complaints per year on documents not being returned. I have also found that it is a standard of practice in the industry to return those documents. DCBS indicates that if the records are not returned, it is considered a violation of the statute and they can take action, but have not found it necessary to do so because the records normally are returned once a phone call is made. So, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make you aware of those circumstances. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I'm assuming they wouldn't mind if we codified that in law.
Mr. Chair, as you can probably understand, when the profession is working well within their existing standards of practice. The regulator has an existing statute that they can get compliance with. We don't see that it's necessary to have an additional layer of statute to accomplish that.
Hmm. Well, you said that they return the records when someone makes a phone call. Do they do it automatically?
Mr. Chair, yes. It is a standard of practice in the industry that the original records are returned to the consumer. At the same time, copies of those records are kept and are required to be kept for audit and investigative purposes by various regulators.
And what currently governs that return of records? Is it a bit of a rule or something?
Mr. Chair, it's ORS Chapter 59. I don't have the exact site, but I can get that for you.
Okay.
But it is under there, under the ethical practices part of that statute.
All right. Great. Anybody else have a question regarding this bill or Mr. McCoy? And the ACLU didn't sign up, so I assume that they're happy with it. Sort of. To the extent that Andrea can be happy. Okay. Good. All right. Good. She takes my teasing reasonably well, anyway. All right, John. Thank you
Mr.
Much.
Chair.
Appreciate that. And I'll close the public hearing. 2682. Open the public hearing on. Actually, we have two bills yesterday that we heard that were legislative council bills, 2314 and 2316. I'd like to see if we can move those out based on the testimony from yesterday. If I could do a work session on 2314.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ringelhoff.
Move 2314 to be floor to do pass recommendation.
Right, Senator Ringo moves House Bill 2314 to the floor of the Senate to do pass recommendation. And do you want that on a consent calendar?
Or?
Okay, and place it on the consent calendar. Any objections or discussion on the motion? Any objections that are on the motion? Passes. Can't give it to Ringo. Sorry?
Can you get it to Vicki?
Yeah.
Sure you can. She'll be well by then. It's on the consent calendar.
Yeah,
3 days.
Senator Vicki Walker carrying that drill. And 2316 session on that bill.
Sure.
Senator Burton.
I move.
House Bill
2316.
At the very bottom.
There we go. I move House Bill 2316 to the 10th floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Burdick moves House Bill 2316 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation and perhaps in the
consent calendar.
And it'll be placed in the consent calendar. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? There is none. Motion passes. Senator Starr can present this one.
All right.
Would get you in competition with your son.
Not curing the drill.
Not likely.
Okay. All right, let's go to 3107 public hearing. And we have a Mr. Larry Hatch.
Chairman and committee members, my name is Larry Hatch. I'm the Assistant Director for the Washington County 911 Center. Here in support of House Bill 3107 opens the language in the 911 bill that restricts the use of the non-published telephone number information that's contained in that database. It opens it only slightly, saying that public safety agencies can use that information for notifying the public of an emergency. Back when this language was originally written, like a community notification system, a system that can make mass community notifications weren't even in place yet. Now they are, and they're becoming more frequently used by communities. Washington County purchased one 2 months ago now. And it gives us the ability with this system and the phone lines connected to it, if we had a hazardous materials spill or some kind of emergency in a neighborhood or an area of our county, to go to a map, draw a polygon, a circle, a square, or whatever around that area that we want to notify, record a message to be sent to those people within that area, hit a button, and with our system we can make 23 simultaneous phone calls to make notification of what's going on. These systems are, I know Multnomah County has one and Lane County has one, and I believe Columbia County. But when we looked at the system in Washington County, we found that 100,000 of our citizens have non-published telephone numbers, and we were afraid to move forward with the emergency notification part of it if we didn't have a better shot at notifying everyone in that area. So we're hoping that you'll support the bill that we brought forward, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Anyone have questions? There are no questions. So I have a quorum. Great.
Mr. Chairman,
based
on your question, I think you're considering a work session. I'd just rather hold off on this.
That's okay. All right. We'll do that. So we'll hold this one, and I think we've gone through the calendar. 2319 and 2322 we did yesterday. Apparently, 2217 we're not going to deal with today. 2316 is done. I think we're done for the day.
We are.
All right. Any other business before the committee?
We didn't move 2682, right?
We did not move 2682. I have some issues with it. Close the committee. We're adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.